Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Jim Harold. Jim Harold has been a name synonymous with the paranormal and podcast world for more than a decade. As one of the first paranormal podcasters in the world, Jim has heard from some of the most fascinating people in the world of the unknown, hosting thousands of episodes of Jim Harold's Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast. Today, we discuss what life is like and some fascinating stories with a fellow broadcaster of the paranormal.
Well, I think it goes back to me. I'm kind of in that 50-year-old marque. And I was a little kid when Leonard Nimoy had In Search Of. And thank you for having me on the show, by the way.
Sure.
It's a real pleasure. And the thing is that I watched that show and it kind of instilled in me this thought that, you know, there's something else. There's something beyond. There's something that we don't understand. Now, watching that show at the end, I will always get frustrated because they never had an answer. You know, I always wanted an answer. And I have to say, maybe that frustration has continued to this day because as many different interviews and people I've talked to, I don't think I have the answers, but definitely would go back to my elementary school days and Leonard Nimoy and In Search Of was just fascinated by that show and still kind of informs my thinking in the sense that, you know, some people are ghost people. Some people are UFO people. Some people are cryptid people. I'm kind of all of it. I'm interested in all this stuff.
What were specifically some of the cases or some of the things that you saw on the Leonard Nimoy show that really fascinated you that you almost kind of go back to today when you think back to those years?
Well, you think about, and some of these are not quite paranormal. Some of them have, you know, other shades of life, like the Jack the Ripper one they did. Amelia Earhart, mysterious disappearances. That's fascinating. Of course, Bigfoot. I was always fascinated by that 1967 film by Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. Always fascinated by that. That's always one, that famous shot, the shot of the Sasquatch or the Bigfoot walking, supposedly. That one always fascinated me. And then probably my greatest fascination in the paranormal, and they covered it on various programs, is the idea of the afterlife. The thing about all these things we talk about, you might not see a UFO. You might not see a Bigfoot. Heck, you might not even see a ghost. But I hate to say it, but everybody listening to the sound of my voice right now, you're going to die. It might be 80 years from now. It might be 90 years from now. If there's life extension, it might be 100 years from now. But eventually you die. And I think we all kind of wonder, well, what's next? And the shows that they did that focused on that were maybe the most fascinating. And of course, one we don't hear much of today, the Bermuda Triangle and all the strangeness that went on down there. Love that stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely an area that that fascinates me, too. When I was a kid, I remember I went on a cruise and unbeknownst to me, all of a sudden my mother's like, and they said we're in the Bermuda Triangle today. And I'm like, yes. And I'm sure other people are like, oh, God. And I'm like, maybe something will happen.
maybe we'll disappear and find out where, you know, what was that flight 49? I can't remember the name of the flight. Flight 49, I think it was. The squadron, World War II era pilots, and they went missing and all the strange radio communications and so forth. So that's always been one. And then that creepy music they had on it.
Yeah.
In Search Of. It still plays in my mind. They just knew how to make it spooky.
Yeah. I think you can look back on some of those old programs and there's just, there's a certain element of it, no matter how technically advanced television can be, There's just an element to some of those older programs that can't be replicated. For me, it's Unsolved Mysteries. For me, there's nothing, nothing creepier than the intro music to Unsolved Mysteries and Robert Stack giving his intro and the reading the title cards. And that's just, it's perfect.
I mean, I went from In Search Of to Unsolved Mysteries. Yeah. I was a little, that show, I went right from In Search Of to Unsolved Mysteries. I absolutely love that program, and you're right, again, that creepy music, and Robert Stack was the best host for that. Nobody, and that's the thing about some of these things, nobody else can do it. And what I loved about them, same thing, they covered a wide range of topics. You know, you'd have true crime, which kind of, it's like a Venn diagram, it kind of a little overlap, because there's also, you know, is there something supernatural and evil going on with serial killers and just all of the different things. Now, what I read about that show is that the producers and the people involved with it, I can't speak for all of them, but in general, they were personally very skeptical of the paranormal stuff. Mm-hmm. But it did so well, they said, we got to do this. We've got to make this a part of what we do. And they did it so well. And again, another one of those classic series that cannot be replicated. I know they tried. They tried with In Search Of. To me, you can't replicate that. It was a thing that was perfect for its time and place.
Yeah, you're exactly. And another interesting fact about that show that I don't know that a lot of people realize is when they went out and they did the reenactments of the cases on Unsolved Mysteries, they would just find local actors, like from the local high schools and local playhouses, to do the scenes. And it's kind of amazing because some of them were a little hokey, but some are pretty good. And these are folks that I'm sure just still live in these communities. And if you went to that town, and you go, oh my God, you were the person on Unsolved Mysteries. At least I would be the one cornering someone at the 7-Eleven going, you were the one on the bunk bed episode.
That's right. And that was really smart producing. That keeps costs down.
I mean, yeah.
When you do a show like that, you got to think about that. How you do that. How can you get a story across and do it economically?
Yeah.
Because they were doing so many reenactments. Just a great show. And Robert Stack, oh my gosh, with the trench coat and the fog and the whole thing.
The
cool thing was they actually solved some mysteries.
Yeah. They always had the phone number at the end, and then they would show the call center. And you wonder, did that call center really exist like that? Were people sitting there at the Unsolved Mysteries call center waiting for the phone calls to come in? You have to wonder. But they did. They did have those updates. And then there's, we figured out who did what.
Operators are standing by to see if you can answer this unsolved mystery.
It'd be interesting today to dig back into some of those stories and see if any of them have been solved. I'm sure some have, especially the murder ones. I was actually just speaking with someone the other day. One of the most fascinating stories to me on Unsolved Mysteries in the paranormal realm was the haunted bunk bed in Horicon, Wisconsin. And I grew up about 30 minutes from that area, so that's why it really stood out to me. And do you recall that story at all?
I do not.
This is a story where a family gets a bunk bed for their kids, and then immediately after getting it, they start having all of this activity in their home. The husband comes home from work one night and sees it looks like his garage is on fire. He runs into the house to try and alert his family, gets in there. His lunchbox goes flying across the room with just no one through it. It just went flying across the room. He runs out. His family runs out. Garage is not on fire. There's nothing going on. Then the kids start seeing things and hearing things in their room right by the bunk beds. And uncle decides to try and calm the kids down. And as creepy as this kind of sounds, the uncle stays the night in the kids' bedroom, and creepy in a whole other way. But he was just trying to calm the kids down, just like, I'll sleep on the sleeping bag over here. And something absolutely terrified him that he would not speak of. But all they could narrow it down to was the fact that the one changing factor in their life was these bunk beds that they brought into their home. So they decided, okay, let's get rid of the bunk beds. What else could it be? Get rid of the bunk beds. Nothing ever happens again. So that to me has always been a very fascinating story on Unsolved Mysteries. And I never in my life thought I would ever have some sort of reconnection to this story, other than it just being one of those, you know, hooks for me as a child that really got me into the paranormal. But I discovered by doing my show over the years on Real Ghost Stories Online, where people write and call their stories in, a reoccurring theme, and I'd be very curious to know if you ever hear this, of bunk beds being involved in paranormal situations. I don't know why, but for the life of me, we have gotten probably hundreds, if not close to 1,000 stories over the course of the years, where a bunk bed is a contributing factor or one of the weird players in paranormal activity picking up in someone's home. So much so that on our show, we've created this kind of joke about it. We have a bell that we ring. We call it a bunk bed bell. And for years, I would give them out to as premium giveaways to premium subscribers or our EPPs as a thank you for their support. And then they could ring the bell along at home whenever the word bunk bed came up, because it came up so frequently. And it was so bizarre. And I don't know what that is or why that is, but I've been trying to figure this one out for years. Have you seen anything in terms of a trend of bunk beds, or is that just on my head?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. No, not on bunk beds specifically, but there's certainly been a trend of haunted furniture. But let me say something about bunk beds, and I'm just thinking out loud here. Now, we've done a lot of shows on the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire with a topic of poltergeist has come up. And I had interviewed years ago a guy by the name of Michael Clarkson. He's a Canadian journalist who was actually nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and he was a crime reporter. So this was kind of like a just the facts, ma'am, kind of guy. And he did something on poltergeist, did a book. And he came to the conclusion there was really something to it. And in many cases, it has to do with young people and adolescents. And those young people, there's an energy about them or something that, and we know in a lot of the famous cases, there were teenagers in the house. And there's something that seems to happen with something like poltergeist that kind of takes advantage of that reservoir, that great energy that adolescents have, and taps into it and causes weird things to happen. Now, taking that a step further, if you think about bunk beds, you know, maybe that's a little old for bunk beds, but you're dealing with young people with all of this energy and so forth. So, and this is just a thought experiment, could the explanation be, Tony, in these cases, when you're looking at bunk beds being haunted, are they haunted not because of the beds themselves, but the people who inhabit them, who are young, they're boisterous, they've got a lot of energy going on at that type of life, and maybe it's something tapping onto that. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one that I've always been intrigued by, and I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that, because is it something where it's just energy run amok because there's so much of it in that adolescent age, or is it when we talk about that, is there something else harnessing onto it, using it as a battery, like another conscious entity that is using it to manipulate?
I would lean towards the latter. I think maybe something saying, aha, here's a reservoir of power. I can feed off of this. That's what I'm thinking. I think that may be the case. I did want to mention a couple of haunted furniture things.
Yeah.
We had one in the early days of Jim Harold's Campfire that was a woman who said she had a haunted recliner. And all of these weird things, shadow people and all of these different things would happen. And they finally took the recliner out to the lawn that we here in Ohio, we call it a tree lawn. I think other people have other terms for it across the country and the world, but we call it a tree lawn for the garbage. And the person said they looked out the window and they claimed that they could see spirits flying out of it. And that the chair started dragging itself down the street. So that was a very haunted recliner. And they had gotten the recliner secondhand. They had bought it from someone whose loved one died, and that was their chair. And they felt that it was haunted. Another case like that is we had a gentleman, and this was not that long ago, maybe a year ago or so. He was at an estate sale in Los Angeles, And after some back and forth, he ended up a couple of days later going back and buying some items. And the person said, I really like you. I'm going to throw in a few things. And they threw in this old antique mirror. And one day he's at home, and the mirror, I think, is in the same room as he is. And he's sleeping, and he's hearing all this racket, and he wakes up, and there's the mirror, and there's a bunch of people in the room, and they're dressed up like they're, it's kind of old time clothes, like they're going to some kind of function or party. And there's like one central figure, one guy. And this, our caller is like, he's rubbing his eyes. He's looking, he's like, I've got to be imagining things. This is crazy. But this guy walks up to him, and my caller, Michael, says, who are you? And he's like, we came with the mirror. And my caller's like, you know, he's gobsmacked. He doesn't know what to say. And
yeah.
He says, we like to dance. We didn't get to finish our last dance. That's where you come in.
Wow.
And then he went on and on about all these different things. He had an investigator come, and all these things that happened with the house after this mirror. And I, you know, it does make sense to me on one level about items being haunted or possessed, because I think about it this way. I have a knife, a pocket knife that was given to me by my grandfather. My grandfather died in 1981. He's been gone a long time. Mm-hmm. And I pick up this pocket knife that I keep in a box, you know, among your like oldest keepsakes, and I feel him. Now, again, that could be, some people say that could be psychological, that could be in my mind, but we've had a number of cases over the years where people have called in and said this object has been haunted, or this object, you know, this belonged to so-and-so and it had these properties. I really do believe that particularly something you carry all the time or something that you sit in all the time, like a favorite easy chair. I think some of your, I don't know, your spiritual stuff rubs off on it. Your soul rubs off on it. And there is that kind of lingering thing. I've talked to John Zaffis on the Paranormal Podcast quite a few times, the Haunted Collector, about that. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, you know, you got to kind of watch what you bring into your house. We had a classic call on Campfire where a young girl had a picture of a flamenco dancer, like a lamp in the shape of a ceramic lamp that had been made. And she started seeing this figure at night, this actually human flamenco dancer at night. And she looked very sinister. And every night she would come closer to her in the bed, speaking of beds, till she was coming right up in her face. And then, her parents said they got rid of the light, but it continued. Little did she know, she was out playing one day or something. She found that they like threw it behind like an old shed or something. And not until they actually physically totally got it off the property did those sightings of this kind of very nasty flamenco dancer, this woman who kept like, you know, kind of, you know, with the gestures and all of that over her bed, stopped appearing. And the thing was, she later found out that that lamp was supposedly made in a prison. You know how in prisons they make different things and sell them or whatever. And that this person had a very kind of, supposedly the person who made it had a very checkered background and did some very nasty things. So I do believe there's something to objects, whether they be furniture or a pocket knife or a ceramic lamp. I think there's something to haunted objects.
Yeah, it's interesting because sometimes I think we'll assume that an object is going to be haunted because it maybe hung on someone's wall or something like that, where it's not necessarily touched every day, but it's there and maybe was part of the atmosphere that someone lived in. But sometimes I'm kind of led more down the road of thinking it's more so objects that were touched every day, that were a part of people. Like, I'm almost more apt to guess that the favorite dress that someone has donated to the local Goodwill from their grandmother that she wore as often as she could is going to be a heck of a lot more haunted than that piece of art that is over in the back of the store.
But that reminds me of something. I just want to put something that happened to me that I mentioned to Zaphis that was interesting about something hanging on the wall. So my parents weren't particularly well off, but we had this second house that they ended up retiring to. And hanging on the one bedroom wall was a large diploma with very kind of old school ornate writing, probably from the 20s or 30s. And it freaked me out. It freaked me out so much that this is back in the day when people used to burn garbage. Mm-hmm. They ended up burning it, which I was very happy about because it freaked me out every time I saw it. And I thought it was something about the weird calligraphy on it or whatever.
Sure.
And John Zaphis was talking about some things on the show, and I mentioned this, and he said, no, it wasn't the weird calligraphy. That object could have very well been haunted or something about that object in that way. And the visceral reaction wasn't a visual reaction. You were picking up on something. I don't know, but I that always kind of stuck with me, you know?
Yeah. Weird. I mean, just to have something and to have something like that still be in the house that, you know, that you go into where you would think this is, you know, this is a piece of someone's life. This is important to them, whether or not even that individual is still alive. If it's dad's, grandpa's, who's ever, you'd think they would have been taken with them. Why would they leave it in the house?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was one of those things. I think in retrospect, they should have reached out to somebody. Says, does somebody want this?
Sure.
But maybe they left it. And I think he even made that point. Maybe they left it for a reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't want it with
yeah.
them.
You have to wonder.
Yeah. And I even looking at it, even thinking about it now, I'm picturing in my mind's eye, and I was like 11, 12 years old. So the picture isn't that clear. But even that kind of freaks me out a little bit. I get a little shiver. It's like, and I've seen, and I love old stuff typically. I mean, I'm a big fan, you know, the older, the better. I'm like the kind of nerd to watch Antiques Roadshow. So I love old stuff.
Sure.
But that diploma freaked me out.
When someone has an object that they go and get rid of that they believe had something attached to it, of the example that I'm sure you've probably heard a gazillion times is we played with the Ouija board, we went and destroyed the Ouija board. The Ouija board is back in the closet the next day. You know, that sort of thing where the object either returns or maybe the object does actually get destroyed and it doesn't make a, you know, resounding return to a closet. Are you ever truly getting rid of the entity or whatever it is that's attached to it by going and crushing that bunk bed or destroying that piece of art or that lamp if there's something attached to it? Or is that releasing that spirit, or is it putting that spirit or whatever it may be into that area wherever the remnants of it reside? Obviously, it's an opinion-based question, but I'm curious as to what your thoughts are.
If it were me, what I would do is if I had something like that, I would not necessarily destroy it in my home. I wouldn't take apart that bunk bed in my house. Mm-hmm. I would try to get rid of it as one whole piece. I mean, again, and we've had this discussion before on the various shows we've been on together recently. I don't consider myself an expert. So anything I say is just my opinion, which is no better than anybody else's opinion.
Yeah.
But I would think, to me, the idea would be to get it physically out of your house, for example. Then if you had to break it into pieces, do that outside and then get it totally off your premises. That would kind of seem to be a reasonable order of operation. But as we know, there's no science to this stuff. So sometimes that might work and sometimes it might not. Maybe you take that bunk bed out the door and the spirit or whatever that's attached to it says, hey, you can take the bunk bed, but I'm staying here.
Yeah, that's what I wonder about is no matter where it's destroyed or disposed of, does it then just jump onto something else? Is it just like kind of opening its door to go on to something? When you have something that is having some sort of conscious intent to attach to something. I mean, obviously, again, nobody's an expert where it's all just based on opinion. But do you think those, when people do go down that road, do those things just jump to something else? And it's just kind of, you know, it continues on indefinitely.
It is weird because I used to be, not so much now, but I used to be big on thrifting, like going to thrift stores.
Sure.
But now I'm a little more, after doing these, it's changed my attitude on some things. I'm a little more careful about that.
Yeah.
It's something that I'm just like, I like that. I like old stuff. My wife, it's funny because we'll watch Antiques Roadshow. My wife will say, it's a pile of junk. And it'll be, and that'll fetch $8,000 at auction. So she's kind of that. And I'm like, I like old stuff. And I guess because I'm getting old. But anyway, I'm a little more leery of that kind of stuff. It's like, do I want to bring that in my house or not?
Are there any objects that you would absolutely not get into your house that you've seen? Any specific types of things where you're like, no matter how cool this is, I'm not bringing that in?
I wouldn't, I wouldn't do anything with like pentagrams or anything like that, or any kind of witchcraft kind of stuff. Nothing like that. Although I have witchcraft books because I interview people on witchcraft, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with witchcraft.
Sure.
But, you know, there's certain places where I would draw lines, certainly. And I know some people may take offense, but I wouldn't get into things like Satanism or anything like that. We have a Ouija board, but that belonged to my wife when she was a teenager, and it's just sat in the basement for years now. At this point, I would not bring it out and use it. I don't know if I'd throw it in the garbage. It's been sitting there for
sure.
Been sitting there for 20 years. I don't think I would bring, you know, pentagrams, witchcraft kind of stuff. I probably wouldn't do that. But I mean, other than that, those are the main things I wouldn't bring. Like a real skeleton. I don't think I'd want a real skeleton in my house, for example.
My wife and co-host on Real Ghost Stories Online has a thing with mirrors. She will not buy a used mirror from an antique store. We can go to At Home or Home Goods or whatever and buy it brand new, but the old used ones, no matter how ornate and beautiful they are, those are objects she's like, nope. I think, and it's,
you know, because what, that makes sense. I gotta tell you why it makes sense. I think there's something going on, because if I'm sure you've talked to people about the psychomantium and scrying and black mirrors and those kind of things. That's where, most people don't know, that's where the show Black Mirror gets its title. The idea that you can look into a black mirror and see spirits and contact the other side and so forth. In fact, I had one of those in the house somewhere, and I think that I passed it along because I get a lot of books and things. And this was early on. I got a book about scrying, and it had one of those in it, and I ended up getting rid of it, which I actually kind of regretted. I thought about trying it, but it's like, it is kind of spooky. But anyway, the mirror story that I told you earlier about the antique mirror, that plays in very well with your wife's concern. Had another one where someone at Christmas time was staying at a family, the whole family got together for Christmas. Sounded very neat, like at a lodge or somewhere. And this kid wakes up and he sees these two men in tuxedos walking down the stairs in a kind of herky-jerky way. I don't know if you've heard that before. Sometimes when you see entities, they walk in like a weird herky-jerky kind of way. Mm-hmm. And in an echoey way, one of them said together, "Oh dear, what a mirror image we are." So we've had some real campfire classics on the show who have specifically revolved around mirrors. I am also somewhat leery of used mirrors.
Yeah.
I think I agree with your wife. I think she's a smart woman there.
No, I agree. It's one of those objects where I can pass easily on a mirror. There's been some odd things, and I too love going and looking at antique stores and thrift stuff, because I'm fascinated with older things. But just like you, over the years, I've become more and more hesitant on what I will consider bringing into my home. Two things that I've seen in the last couple of years, and that I'm curious to hear what some of these would be for you. The more disturbing things that I've seen at antique stores, I've seen coffee tables made out of the device which would hold a casket. I don't know what that's technically called, but it's like the roller type thing that you would put a casket on and roll it. And I've seen several of those in the last handful of years, either just by themselves or somebody made a real kitsch looking coffee table out of it. to me that's like, I don't know, you know, not that the individual spent much of their life or at all of their life on in the casket with this object, but just the fact of the sadness and all of the emotion that was surrounding this object through so many ceremonies, I would think that this is probably an object maybe prone to have something attached with it. The other thing that I'd seen at an antique store, this was in Wisconsin several years ago, and I could not believe it was there. And I don't know that they even knew what it was, but it was behind a glass counter, and they were very small, but they were two slave gravestones. They were unmarked. The names were not on it. But if you knew what it was, you knew what it was. And I very question if they had any idea what it was. But I was shocked to see that in an antique store. And my wife is from the South, and she could recognize it just from her history and knowing what that looks like. She's like, oh my God, did you see what that is there? And I'm like, no. And I didn't know what it was. I thought they just looked like bricks or something. And she's like, those are slave gravestones. Like somebody took them. And like, oh my God, I wonder if they know what it is. So those were two of the more bizarre, this shouldn't be an antique store type things. What is it for you? Have you come across anything in the last handful of years as you go about and you go, oh my God, I can't believe they're selling this in an antique store?
I haven't been at that many antique stores so far. I'm amazed by that gravestone idea. So no, I don't have any that nope. come to mind in particular, but it reminded me, and I'm not trying to change the subject here, but changing the subject.
Go ahead, yeah.
Is it reminded me of a funeral home story that we had, and it was very sad. And it was one of those, like, you know, I kind of wonder what was behind that. But anyway, this family, young couple, I guess, lived over a funeral home, their family's funeral home. And they had a small baby, and the baby was, in this one bedroom that had a closet that had a bunch of the funeral home supplies and things in it. And they had a baby monitor, and they would hear all kinds of ruckus and stuff in the night, and they would go, and the baby would be fine. And they'd hear like sounds of a baby crying, and the baby would be fine. And the baby was cantankerous and didn't want to sleep and those kind of things, as I recall the story. So anyway, they were commenting to the grandfather, who was the owner of it. And he said, oh no, I'll take care of this. And he goes to the closet and he takes a box out, and it turns out, and this is very sad, that they had the remains of a baby, like ashes or something, I don't know, that someone did not claim. And they were keeping them in the funeral home, and he had put them in the closet. And once they moved that box of ashes, that box of remains, baby was fine. No more weird crying from the baby monitor. Baby was much calmer, slept much better. Wow. I mean, that's a pretty creepy story. But funeral homes, to me, I mean, I know for people who work in the funeral industry, and God bless them, because that's such a tough thing to do. I mean, psychologically, seeing loss every day and having to always comfort people, that's going to be a very tough job. So I have great respect for those people. My God, I don't know how, but I know it's used to, I don't know that it is now, but I'm sure it used to be very common that the mortician or someone would live like above the funeral home. That would be their home. I couldn't do that, Tony. I could not do that. Just knowing that there's like dead people. And again, I've heard it often said, you have more to fear from the living than you do the dead. But I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't. Could you do it? I mean, I'm not the kind. If somebody said, okay, we want you to spend this night alone in this apartment over a funeral home. Mm-hmm. And there's dead bodies and everything. And hey, you might get this cool thing if you stay by yourself in a funeral home overnight. I wouldn't do it.
No,
would you do it?
No. I'm quite comfortable just in my studio hearing the stories and not being the one out there. That's what I always say. Because I think that's the misconception that I get all the time is you tell somebody what you do, like, oh, so you're out there investigating? No, I'm in my studio and I'm hearing and I'm moderating.
That's exactly my standpoint. People say, well, why don't you hunt ghosts? And I've talked about this on other shows before. to me, it's like a sportscaster, right? You have the sportscasters who play the game, and that's great. But I also think there's a value to someone who never did play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who has a little bit of an arm's length, someone who can moderate, kind of being, I don't know what the saying is, you're in it, but you're not of it.
Sure.
And so I think that gives me, in some ways, and I'm sure you feel the same way about what you do, gives us more credibility because we're not wedded to one theory or one technique or those kind of things, because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We're more of arbiters and kind of the straw that stirs the drink.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Jim Harold, of course, host of the Paranormal Podcast and Jim Harold's Campfire. Both can be downloaded wherever you download podcasts. In part two of our conversation, available exclusively to Gravekeepers, those are supporters of our program, we're going to talk about what kind of paranormal experiences Jim had over his life. What happened to a young child in a home above a funeral parlor? What unexplained event happened to Jim while on a cruise ship with Rosemary Ellen Guiley? What strange reaction did Jim once get when he revealed that he hosted a paranormal podcast? And has Jim ever had an intuitive sense of impending danger that benefited him in terms of saving him or picking him out of danger? Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.